You are listening to Season 2 of Strings Attached. I am Asaf Maoz, a musician, violin player most of my life, and in the past few years I discovered that I can make chamber music by talking to different people, have them open up to me and tell me, and you, their personal life story. My main goal in this podcast is to inspire people, show you, the listeners, that musical life is similar to many other fields of expertise, although it does take a long time to master this craft. In season 2, I chose to dedicate the first 4 episodes to women. As a man, I see often that the world of music, and probably other fields as well, is lacking feminine role models. I keep wondering to myself, if I am a young woman who aspires to excel in my field, who do I have to look up to? A man? Or a woman like me? In the next few episodes, you will be able to hear my conversations with 4 very successful women. In each episode, I ask them almost the same questions, but I am amazed to hear such different and fascinating answers. Together, we try to decipher who were their role models and how did they become themselves role models. I invite you to listen to this season of Strings Attached. Share it with friends who might find it interesting. I would love for this podcast to get to as many ears as possible. If you do like what you hear, please rate or review this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's really nice for me. But moreover, it helps others to find out about this podcast. And now, let's get to business. First episode of season 2 is with my very special guest, star violinist Clara Jumi Kang.
Yes, hello. My name is Clara Jumi Kang. I'm here this week to perform with the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra and Maestro Lahav Shani, and we're doing Prokofiev No. 2 this week.
People cannot see you, but you're still very, very young. And I wonder if you remember what was your dream or wishes when you were younger?
When I was younger, well, actually, my dream was always to become a musician, because I started violin and piano at the age of 3, and I have both musicians' parents. They were both opera singers, and 2 older siblings were also doing already music by the time I was born. So I think it just very naturally formed.
Was there a moment or a phase that you remember thinking, okay, this is going to be my thing. This is going to be my professional path. Or it was just clear from the get-go?
I think it was very clear from the start, because I remember when I was about 4 and I started playing one of my first concerts, I was always very excited on the day, and I just loved making music, also in front of people. So I think, I knew. And violin, especially violin, I preferred more to the piano, which I learned at the same time, because it was my own. And my older siblings always share their toys with me. And as soon as I got my small violin, I felt like it's my only toy that no one else can touch. So I would sleep with it and just not let it go.
Do you sleep with it still?
Yes, I do. It's actually the bed next, but for different reasons. In case, you know, something happens, I just have to take the violin with me.
I wonder, I mean, you mentioned that your parents were musicians. Mm-hmm. Was there a time that they told you, you don't have to become a musician? You could choose a different path? Or was it always clear that the family supports this kind of a lifestyle?
I think my parents were very supportive when I was young. Especially my parents were both freelance opera singers, which meant that they were able to travel and move us to different cities. So I remember when I was 5, I moved to a different city to study with a very, very famous violin teacher, Zaha Braun. And then when I was 7, I moved to the States to study with Dorothy DeLay, who is another legend who passed away. And I think my parents were very supportive. But they were very strict about practicing. They said, if you want to become a musician, you have to have discipline. And if you cannot have discipline, then you shouldn't do it.
And did you have discipline? Were you disciplined, or was it something that comes with the time?
I think I enjoyed practicing. I still do. I do even more. And yeah, I didn't mind being alone. And I think that's one of the key strengths maybe a soloist needs, to be able to be alone and practice.
I'll come back to you loving practicing till today, but I wonder, I mean, you're talking about this loneliness, and this is something I felt all my life is, you know, we spend hours, many hours alone in the practice room. How do you deal with this loneliness? I mean, sometimes it's nice to share your thoughts or questions or your everything with other people. How do you do that?
Honestly, when I was young, I couldn't be left more. I couldn't wanted to be left alone more. Coming from a big family with four siblings, and I was such an introvert. I still am, and I was very shy when I was a girl. So I think through this kind of born personality, I think I didn't feel very lonely. I was very happy to be alone, still am. But coming in my 30s, I kind of, this is what people mean when they say they're lonely. But I think as an artist, musician, as a soloist especially, I think that's exactly what I think my parents told me when I was very young. You know, if you think this is your calling, there are sacrifices to be made, you know. And I don't think much about it. I just can't wait to practice sometimes.
In my upbringing and many of my friends in different places around the world, they teach us to become a soloist. Mm-hmm. They teach you to stand alone on stage, perform your piece, whatever instrument, and be the best. Mm-hmm. What is the downside of being a soloist, beside being alone?
Oh, there are many. You know, I think what saved me or saves me is my curiosity and my love to be with people. But at the same time, when I am with people, I do use a lot of my energy. So and then I'm happy to be back alone. But as a soloist, the downside is that you kind of can be in your own world, which is a good thing. But also it kind of makes you lose maybe some insights, some, you know, larger picture of music even, because we just, as a violinist, I just play one line. And so I do try to play a lot of chamber music up to a point where I feel like, for example, just before I came here, I was playing chamber music. And of course, it's not that easy to mix, you know, because it's different type of music making. But chamber music, without chamber music, I wouldn't be the soloist that I am. Chamber music is the ground of music making. I mean, we did chamber music all week.
Exactly.
All time this week, yeah.
And what is the best part of being a soloist?
Being alone.
Yeah. You are very fortunate and you won some very nice competitions, and you made your name and your fantastic career, which is still building. But let's assume for a second this all didn't happen. Can you imagine see yourself having a job in an orchestra?
I did. I was never in an orchestra, but I did think about this option when I was, especially when I was in my early 20s. This is a very long story, but just very shortly put together, I had an accident when I was 11. So I had to stop playing violin for about 3 to 4 years. So I did experiencing just going to school and doing different kinds of music. Like I sang in a band, in a gospel band actually, and composed my own songs. And so and it was very sad time for me because I was a non-violinist in half a day. I was playing basketball and I broke my finger, my small finger. So that is also one of the reasons I think coming back, which was quite a miracle that I could play again. So when I was 20 and when I was doing the competitions, and in my college years in Korea, where I went to college, I did play a lot of Mahler symphonies and Bruckner, and I also did concertmaster there. And I thought, wow, as a soloist, if I didn't have this chance, I wouldn't know. And some of my favorite music is symphonies. So I thought about it, and then I did competitions, and then I got prizes, and then I was busy doing concerts, so that kept me away from orchestra. And then I had another thought when I was about 26, 27. But then I realized that all my colleagues that were concertmasters or had become concertmaster had so much more experience in orchestra, which I didn't. And I felt already it was too late. Mm. And a concertmaster is not something that you can, you know, just be at any time. Just because you were a soloist doesn't make you a concertmaster.
Well, some people do think that they can do it, but that's a different topic. And I wonder, I grew up listening to some phenomenal recordings of Perlman and Zuckerman, you know, trying to imitate their sound. I remember, I mean, I'm a bit older than you, and I remember listening to cassettes and CDs of theirs. Did you grow up listening or imitating or seeing any artist as something you would like to be of such? Or
I'm sure every violinist had this phase. There was a phase I was obsessed with Heifetz, with Oistrakh. I still admire them so much. Gitlis. And also from my Korean violinist, Kyungha Chung. She's also a very big role model, I think, for any Korean violinist especially. I also admire Milstein very much. The way he kept Bach close to his life. His ethics as a musician, how he kept growing and was still in a phenomenal, condition when he was, I don't know, almost 70, 80, yeah, and still playing whole Bach. That is something that I am aiming for, hopefully.
And you yourself now, I mean, you, judging by your following over social media and your success around the world, you yourself are a role model, maybe to younger, I don't know if necessarily women or girls making music or any field. Mm. Does it put any pressure on you to keep a certain appearance, or do you ever think about it?
No, the only thing that I think about is that, just slowly getting into the direction of my 40s, I do think and feel a little bit that I have to give back and I want to teach. And I haven't put myself in a position where I would teach in a school yet, because I felt, you know, combining these two things would not be a good fit for me now at this stage. But whenever I have the occasion, I do master classes and I try to meet with students and chat. And so I think it's very important, because all that formed me were my teachers. So I think as a violinist, as a musician, you always have to think about giving back in that way.
Is there something that is important for you to convey, Daryl, to your people who follow you or who aspire to be Clara, or I mean, do you even encourage them to become musicians, or knowing this business
question
from inside out?
Yeah, I actually, when people, you know, when I do masterclass and I have a Q&A session and students ask me, you know, what is the key to becoming a soloist, and you know, what we talked earlier, I say, you know, If you are a lonely person, if you feel, you know, you then this is not the right profession. And don't exclude orchestra, don't exclude chamber music. It's a wonderful profession. It's probably more fulfilling than a soloist. I think the younger generation is really getting it. Because when I was growing up, when you were growing up, I think we were just, it's either soloist or not. And I think now kids, they go to orchestra camp. They learn excerpts very young, early on. And that's why we have phenomenal young concertmasters everywhere, because they just start earlier and it just brings much better results. So I think it's all heading in a better direction.
I have a question that I don't know how to put it in words. I'm going to ask it anyways, and feel free to rephrase it. Mm. People cannot see you, but you are very slender, very beautiful woman. And you have this really beautiful, strong playing. And I've heard people say of your playing, she plays like a man. And is this something that one thinks about? Does it bother you? Or is there such a thing as playing like a man? I'm asking because I'm a man, I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe it's also because I'm quite tall for women standard. Well, I don't think I was always like that. I think there were probably phases where I sounded a little bit, let's say, more, you know, a little less volume, you know, but I think that's the direction that we go to. And for violinists, it really also matters on what instrument you're playing. If you have an instrument that's very feminine, you have to figure out within that, you know. But my violin, fortunately, that I play now since about a year, is very masculine. And that gives me the room to have a deeper, you know, more earthy, for me to dig in and to explore that register.
Which meant for you to change the way you think of playing, or?
It just, you know, I always wanted to play that way, but the violin that I had before, you know, didn't really allow that kind of digging in playing. And now that I have this, I feel like I have so much more palette that I can, you know, and I feel like it can really take my power and my strength, my physical power. So I'm very happy that.
I speak many times with young musicians or younger generation, and we talk a lot about what's my personal advantage as a musician compared to others. What's your forte? What do you think is your personal strength?
That I'm not lonely, that I don't feel very lonely, I think is one of the key points to, as we said, being a soloist. When something happens that during a concert trip, during, you know, playing, that kind of gets me off radar, I'm very quick to jump back. That I think is one of my strengths. Weakness, well, I am quite sensitive to my surroundings, to people. So it can work in miraculous ways, and sometimes it just, I feel things. So, and I feel mood all around me. I feel mood of the audience as soon as I step on stage. I don't know why, but I feel kind of what the audience, you know, is maybe craving.
You were talking before about you still loving to practice.
Yeah.
What do you practice? I mean, you can play the violin like crazy. Mm-hmm. Why? What do you practice?
You know, we play 3 concerts now, right? So we just played one today morning. And this is one of the most exciting process. When you're on a tour, we're going to play one last time, which I'm going to be very sad about, tomorrow.
Yes.
But, you know, when you've played 2-3 times, then you know it's improving. And you know, you're creating different sounds, different, you know, colors every night. And then you just want to dig in more into the score, more into what more can I do, what more can I find here. And that's the most exciting process, when you're over the premiere, over the nervousness of the first performance. You've done the second, which is probably the worst. And then the third time is you know, you see the improvement. And then for the fourth time...
You still get nervous?
Oh, yeah. With age, much more.
Interesting. But, I mean, we spoke about you playing Prokofiev this week, and you played it before. Why would you get nervous? I mean, you have it.
Me as a person, I feel very happy and fulfilled when I have a purpose, a special purpose, a spiritual purpose. And that's when I get more nervous, because I feel a lot of responsibility. It's not just a debut somewhere, or, you know, it's something I have to do something as an artist. And that's when I get nervous. Also, when, you know, you would think in a season, if you play this concerto a couple of times with different orchestras, that you're like, oh, I'm getting it, you know, it's in my system now. No, you get more, you have more expectation of yourself. And at the end of the day, you're the one who goes back to your hotel room, probably eating room service, and going to bed and thinking about the mistake that you did on stage. And it's a disappointment for yourself. It's not for... You get nervous not to because you didn't, because of others, but because you are the one who has to deal with it, I think, you know.
It makes me think that... Are you good at giving yourself compliments?
Not at all. But I mean, you know, people after a concert, who gives you critique in your face? Everyone gives you a compliment. And I think that's enough. I think you don't have to give yourself compliments. I mean, I'm always very happy when I felt something on stage, when I felt together with the orchestra, with the conductor, and I get something from the audience, I give something, that I'm very happy about. But generally about my playing, about how I interpreted this composer, I'm always very, yeah, very unhappy about.
Yeah. I saw you today preparing for the concert in your dressing room. Do you do only physical preparation of just playing scales and some passages, or do you do anything mental to bring yourself to this moment of, you know, somebody who never experienced it, going on stage, the door opens, and it's you in front of a bunch of people playing music with you. I mean, do you, or...
Physically on my violin, I usually put my mute on, because I don't like the boomy dressing room sound. And then going on stage and then taking off the mute and then suddenly feeling like you have a tiny sound. So I like to do the opposite, you know, have a tiny sound in my dressing room and then go out and feel free. Mentally, I drink lots of water, lots of also kind of something that has sugar. And I do pray, because, at that stage it's really... Yeah, you have to be spiritual there, spiritually, how do you say, elevated, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
We spoke about it, that you came to play with us, and it was almost like a first date. That just a first date with you and 80 people on the stage, I mean, between the orchestra and you, and it was almost an immediate connection. I hope you felt the same. What's it like to go and... several dates of such in a year? You go, I don't know how many concerts a year you're playing, and you have this date, constant dating with people.
It's not always like this. I think it's a perfect triangle that creates this, which is the conductor, who is probably, anyway, the complete owner of this triangle. Then it's the soloist and it's the orchestra. And if I feel like the conductor and the orchestra don't have a chemistry, then I'm quite stuck in the middle. And then even if I and the orchestra feel bonded, the performance itself cannot be this, you know, this absolute perfect date. This time, yeah, it maybe happens if we're lucky, maybe 2-3 times in a season that this triangle gets formed perfectly. And that's why I will be sad tomorrow when it ends. But it's for me, you know, it's the perfect end of year gift. Yeah.
Because your life is basically of a freelancer.
Hmm.
You have to be, in quotes, reinvited.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is a successful date, you're going on a second date, but it might happen in a year or two.
Exactly.
It's a very strange feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
That you have
now
to,
that you say
no, I'm saying it. I love your playing, and the orchestra I know adores you. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's very strange to go on a date, and then the next one is in a year or two.
Well, I think it keeps us on our toes. And I think that's the life of a soloist. That's why, you know, also one thing that I tell young students, if you want to do this profession, you have to look at 50 years. And hopefully you will be able physically to do it 50 years. That's what I'm aiming for. But there is no immediate success. Yes, of course, there are child prodigies and there are people who start early careers and there's it's great. And if it can continue, and it will continue for most people. But what I'm saying is that you cannot, you know, when we do, for example, sports and we go, you know, get medals, you get immediate results. As a musician, at the end of the day, you get few compliments, you're on your own, then it's next. And you're... There is a cruel saying, you're as good as your last performance as a soloist. And that's part of the loneliness also, that you have to just look at 20, 30 years and just, yeah, it's a long journey. It's a long journey, and you shouldn't crave this instant success. If you crave that, I think being a classical musician, soloist, is the wrong profession.
Maybe that's a very good advice for somebody who's listening.
Mm.
You are, let's say, I don't know if it's a good word, but you're famous. What's the good thing about fame? Is there a good thing about it? Does it make you happy?
I've never felt that I'm famous. I don't think any classical musician is famous. So, sorry, but it's true. I don't know what is famous nowadays. Honestly, you can have 1 million followers on Instagram. You can be a YouTuber and you're famous. So fame is something very subjective. I want to, you know, like I said, having a purpose, like this trip for me, is the most fulfilling, and that's why I do this job. This profession. And I think this is the opposite of famous. I think, I want to do... I admire selfless people. I admire people who do things and don't accept anything in return. And,
You're playing on a violin that is almost 300 years old, and you're talking about YouTube... And Instagram, this...
Which I love. I love YouTubers. That's how I you know, there are a lot of YouTubes that I follow because part of being alone in a hotel means a lot of YouTube watching.
So how do you deal with this? I mean, you're totally old school with your profession and instrument, yet you live in this such a modern world and you're in social media and everything. Yes. How does it work?
Well, you know, doing social media myself has always been very not something I'm good at. And still I'm not. I'm still always late posting anything. I always forget most of the time to post something and then it's already too late. But I'm a very curious person. I admire people in every profession. And I think that's why I watch YouTube. One of my favorite YouTube channels is... Have you ever watched Actors on Actors?
Yes.
It's like a conversation between actors. I love movies. I love theater. I love travel vlogs. You know, people who travel around the world and record it. So that's, I think, I'm in my hotel preparing and making myself as lonely as possible and saving my energy for the concert. And then on the web, I see people traveling to Sri Lanka and, you know, maybe it's my way of compensating my hotel life.
Where do you recharge? Where do you get your energy? I mean, obviously, you travel quite a lot and you follow those bloggers. Mm. Do you travel to Sri Lanka or the Maldives or go anywhere to make yourself
feel? Not really.
Heal?
Honestly, I didn't have a vacation. I had my last vacation before Corona, so it's been almost 4 years. But, you know, this is... I know I sound very cliche saying this, probably very cheesy, but for me this trip was something because I'm replacing this week. This was not in my agenda. This appeared 3 weeks ago, and this was supposed to be my week home, preparing for the next week. And I'm here on an unexpected trip with the most spiritual awakening thoughts and emotions, and so yeah, this is how I think I will leave this place a different person than when I arrived.
I don't know if I may ask that, but I will ask this. You are here during wartime, and we are talking about spiritual and music, and I wonder, what's it like as a foreigner to be here? But even more so, do you see any strength, anything positive about the people that surround you during this stay? I mean, I'm curious.
We would have to do another podcast for an hour or two. You know, I'm still processing a lot and I'm just having so many thoughts and emotions. It's been quite overwhelming few days since I arrived here, but in the most positive way. For me, when war started already 2 years ago, I was in a different place in Ukraine. It was already very, you know, it was very, very heavy on my heart. And that's why I'm so grateful that I could visit here and just share and see for myself. And with Israel, I've been here before a couple of times, and I was here in September in Jerusalem. So it's and then a month after the war started. So coming here, yeah, I don't make any sense now because I'm just, you know, I probably am still. But what I can say is that I just find people here have different strength. And I think when I leave this place, I will be stronger in my mind and in my heart through the people I met here and through this week with you.
I'm happy you feel this way. And I'm delighted that you chose to come and not cancel. Many people see the war as an act of aggression and they forget that there are other people around you that, like us, that love making music and love building bridges between people. So it's very important for me, for us, that you are here. I mean, I'm very thankful for that. Because you were talking so much about being in a room and room service. And when I travel, I love to eat out and try many different kinds of food and alcohol. Is this something you do? And if so, what's the best? And also, maybe you could give us a tip for what's the best room service you should order.
No, you know, here during this week, actually, I've been treated with so much good food. Every day, I just had lunch in, where is it?
Achim.
Excellent hummus and artichokes. So I'm here. I actually didn't order room service because I was eating out every night and every lunch. But okay, I can give you a few tips about room service. you can be anywhere in the world, and it's not going to be great, but you're not going to fail. First, probably spaghetti with tomato sauce. Just ask them to undercook it, and it will be fine. It will give you enough strength for the concert, at least. Second, probably club sandwich. Mm-hmm. Because it has everything in which probably you need for energy.
And where was the best room service you've ever had?
I think in Asia, generally, in the hotel, room service are quite good quality. The reason why I obviously order room service, not for good food, but just to save my energy, instead of going out, finding place to eat, being in a quite noisy surroundings without having anyone to talk and being by myself. So then I would rather be in room service and read a book or watch something and eat. It's obviously not because it's good.
I don't know. I've never tried it.
But recently, a habit I've developed is, and I did it here as well, is I just go to the local supermarket and buy my own stuff. I would even buy bread and vegetables. And because this I developed during COVID, because I was playing concerts, but the hotels had no restaurants, no room service. And then I would go to supermarkets and buy and just stock the refrigerator and make my own sandwich, my own salad. And yeah.
Well, we got here many advices, and I'm really looking forward to our next date in a year or two. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Yes, thank you very much for your time.
Wow, what a conversation, what an inspiration. To be a soloist, travel the world, yet being so humble and very thoughtful. What did you pick up from this conversation? What made you rethink things that you're doing? I would love to hear from you. So feel free to share your thoughts online on Facebook on the page of Strings Attached Podcast or on my Instagram, Asaf Maoz. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hear from you. Feel free to rate the podcast if you liked it or send it to a friend. Until then, thank you for listening to Strings Attached. I am Asaf Maoz.